Okay, the title of this session will be Counseling in the Personal Studies for New Christians Classroom. And I guess the way I'd like to start this is, how does counseling fit in the Personal Studies for New Christians Classroom? And where it really fits in and how it fits in is, the first thing is, what makes the Personal Studies for New Christians Classroom or counseling different? And that starts with the role of the teacher, and we've touched on this several times. But the most important thing is the role of the teacher versus a conventional lecture class. And that's shown where in the personal studies classroom, the teacher is a counselor, whereas in a conventional classroom, he's more of a teller. And this is possibly more acceptable than for people that maybe have a hard time standing up in front of a large classroom, don't feel comfortable that way. Then their role now as a counselor on more of a one-to-one basis is much more feasible for them, and they feel more comfortable with that. In the PS, or the Personal Studies for New Christians teacher role, he is more of a helper guide than as a teller of truth or a lecturer or someone who has all the things that you need for life and is going to straighten you out and everything. The counseling is more geared towards a person than just towards a class or people as in a huge setting. The teacher finds his role then as more of a counselor and is a gap filler. We've touched on several times in the class or in the tape so far that often the role is to get from content to relating to one's life and then finally to doing it. And the teacher or counselor in personal studies becomes that gap filler, trying to move people from content then to how to relate to one's life, then finally helping them do it or put it into practice in one's life. So how does counseling fit in the classroom? Where does it fit in? What do we do? How is it arranged? And if you look at any one of your lessons, say for instance, lesson 101 in your manuals that you have, the first lesson, you'll see that the lessons are designed or constructed with counseling in mind. That's the way they were put together. For instance, in lesson 101, if you turn to page 3, at the bottom, there's a stop point. And you'll see that there's not only content answers where you fill in the blank, but there's also, as has been touched on before, answers that require a personal answer or things required for people to give their own personal input. Each section then ends, as I pointed out, with a stop point, which stops the teacher not only to check to see if the content is right for correct answers, but more to stop and look over, check the person's answers, and is a time to really have involvement with that student, to have personal input and to look over what they've put and shared and to get to know them. I guess what I really want to emphasize is that on these answers, we're not so much concerned with correct answers, especially on the fill in the blanks, as with getting to know the student and really getting to give input into his life and help him grow. Let's look at how to handle discussions at the stop points. Again, we'll refer to Lesson 101, page 3 at the bottom for an example. What do we do at these stop points? What are some keys or some principles we can use to help us really give some input to these students? And the first key to handling discussions at the stop points is learning how to ask questions. That's the one main key that we all need to learn, is how to ask questions. Counseling is more than telling students how to solve their problems. It is more helpful if we can give them or guide them to discover the answers for themselves. Gary Collins, is in his book, How to Be a People Helper, says, "The client or the student often possesses the answers or ability to create it, but cannot see it." One of the main problems is they know a lot of times, or they would know the answer, but they just can't see it. And that's where our job is, to help them open their eyes to see what's already there. What you can do is to help the student find his own answer by helping him focus on the question to be answered. One of the marks of a good counselor is someone who is able to ask the right questions. And that's what we want to do. We want to learn to ask the right questions, to help people focus in on their questions and really focus in on a question and then answer it for themselves. If you look in the life of Jesus, for example, I mean, there's a really good example in the story of the Good Samaritan. A man comes to him and says, "How may I have eternal life?" And Jesus just doesn't say, which I would probably say, 4 spiritual laws and go through it real quick. But Jesus answers with a question. What does the Bible say and how do you interpret it? What does the law say? How do you interpret it? Then the man answers that question. Finally, he comes back to the man, says, well, who is my neighbor? And then Jesus takes him into the story of the Good Samaritan and finally brings him down to the place and changes the question and points the question to him. Who then proved to be a neighbor? Which he's trying to share with the man, pointing him to a truth that Jesus had in his mind, pointing, directing with questions so that the man could finally see the truth that he needed to apply to his own life. Who is that neighbor? Who proved to be a neighbor? Now you do it. And that's what we want to do. We want to learn to ask the right questions so that we can point them to things instead of just always telling them what to do. I think the point I really want to make is that in counseling with the students, we want to ask questions that will help them find their own answers. One of the things that I have found is helpful, and it's been pointed out already, is to ask questions, like say on lesson 101, when you get to a stop point. Bend down, as Dave has pointed out in a further session, get down at their level and ask them, you know, would you mind reading that answer to me and giving a little more explanation on it? Give me a little more detail. Open them up to share themselves. And I've had some amazing things happen with that. One time it was a plain question, a simple question, but in asking that, the guy ended up sharing with me briefly, but he ended up sharing with me how he was bummed out because he'd had an affair outside of his own marriage, and that his father hated him and had not forgiven him yet. And all this came out just because I took the time to give him time to share himself. And that's the goal. The goal is not just, to get correct answers, but to get to know them better and to help them find answers to their own questions. This gives you the opportunity to learn about the students and to get to know the student. You want to find out what kind of struggles does the student have. What are the student's motives for being here? What are the things they know about God and the Christian life? What are the areas they have obvious distortions about God and what it means to be a Christian? As you go through these lessons at the stop points, if we have these kind of questions in our minds, then we're going to be able to direct the student. We're going to be able to learn about them, get to know them better, see what's really happening in their lives. Where are they really deficient in having major distortions about what God is like? Again, we're not so much trying to tell them things as find out about them. And the major way is by asking questions, just asking simple questions. We don't have to make a federal case of pumping them for information at every stop point. You don't have to stop and try to pump them as much as just at each stop point give them an opportunity to just open up and share themselves. And if they don't want to, don't force them. If they don't want to share something, don't try to pull it out of them and make them, well, come on, beat them over the head. Tell me. You know, we want to create an atmosphere where they feel relaxed and we're just casually asking them if they would give us some more details, and that way they feel comfortable. One of the things is a lot of times in the early lessons, the conversations are going to be pretty brief. Occasionally someone might dump on you and really share a lot, but most of the times they're not going to share a lot. It's going to be a brief conversation, and that's the usual. That's normal. Sometimes it's been pointed out again, somebody might really want to dump a lot of things on you, but due to not having enough teachers, you might want to try to share with them very tactfully. I'm just, I really think this is important, but I think it would be better if we share this at another time. Maybe later on today I'll get back with you where we have more time to really go into this. There is a time, though, you really have to use discernment with this, because if a person's on the verge of leaving the program, they're really disgusted, they're bummed out, and they want to talk about it right then, and you say, well, sorry, we'll have to talk about it later. Later might not come. They might be gone. So we want to try to use a lot of discernment. Does this person really need right now to talk about this? Maybe this is the time. Maybe it's not even about leaving. Maybe right now, though, they're really open, and it's a major issue in their life that could be really use a little input. Then that's the time. And that's how we have to learn to use discernment in that area. The second key to really learning to counsel in the personal studies classroom is first to ask questions, second to become a good listener. And I think that's where all of us have problems. But that is, and again, it's so different from the conventional role where we're so used to dispensing knowledge to sit back and learn to listen. But it's so important to learn to listen to what the student's sharing. It's important because most students have been talked to or told to or talked at all of their lives. They've been told when to do it, how to get up. A lot of guys come from prison or reform schools, etc. And they've had everyone tell them what to do. Again, a lot of the times I think their problems with authority is because the authority figures in their lives have been demanders. And we need to change that where they can see authority figures aren't always standing over them with a club trying to tell them how to get in line. But authority figures can be people that want to listen, that care, and we're willing to take enough time to listen. And I think that's really important that we establish that with students, that we're willing to take the time to really listen to them. We think what they have to say is important. And that's what we're conveying to them. What you have to say is really important. Jim Hyrick, my director, has often said, too often we have empty answers for unasked questions. We're so willing to give an answer and we haven't even heard the question yet. Or we're so willing to interrupt and pump in a solution because we know what it is and the person hasn't really given what they have on their heart. And then that says to them, hey, this guy doesn't think I'm important. Or what I have to say isn't important. And it's really important that we don't convey that to students. If we take the time to listen, we might really pick up some valuable input, like I just shared in that one example, on a student, on a particular issue in a student's life. And that can really help us later on, maybe later on when we counsel in another setting, to really have input. So the first thing is we want to ask questions. The second key is we really want to learn to listen. And the third key in the personal studies classroom to really counseling or having good times of counseling is learning to affirm whatever their response is. And this has been a hard thing for me particularly to learn. Too often I'm willing to say, oh, you know, come on, improve, hurry up, come on, do this better, you should have done that better. And the Lord's really had to deal with me that whatever they say, to encourage them for what they did say, whatever they wrote, that's really good. You're really showing some efforts. And then maybe I can go in and point out a few things. But to initially let them know, hey, what you did is good, your effort's good, you're trying, and that's what's really important. And I think if we learn to do that positive stroke, to really give that to them, it's going to lift them up. It's going to encourage them that they're valuable, that what they have to say is important. And if they feel that what they have to say is important, then they're going to be a lot more willing to share what they have to say. The fourth key to the stop point discussions or leading them is developing our own attitudes, and that's what I just shared, in response to their response. You know, how do we react when perhaps a student in one of the lessons, maybe in 104, where it talks about if you haven't become a Christian, my questions about Christianity, maybe they come off real heavy about how, you know, Christianity's phony, and even maybe the staff are phony that they feel in the center are phonies. You know, are we going to react real defensive? Oh, no, sir, we're good, you know. Are we going to get all upset? What if they disclose some newfound sin or negative attitude that we didn't know about? Are we going to confront them right then and demand them to change? Or maybe even run to the other staff and the director and tell them right away what's going on, and 10 minutes later the student gets kicked out? What are our attitudes to their responses? And I think we need to really work on developing an attitude of openness and acceptance. Attitudes of understanding, where we're really trying to listen and understand where this person's coming from, and mostly an attitude of trustworthiness. That what we have, what they've said to us, we're going to really take in and think about. We're just not going to spout it out all over the world and run and try to nail them. I think it comes down, and it's a real attitude we have to watch, at least I've had to in my years in Teen Challenge, is turning into an enforcer. You know, the cop who looks for things wrong, who's just waiting for them to get on a line so I can nail them. And I have to confess I've had troubles with that at times. And instead becoming a friend, someone who is an authority figure, but someone they know that understands and cares and is someone that will listen. And I think if we can work on our attitudes in response to them, then it's going to help them respond more as they realize the attitudes that are Christ-like in our life. Our goal has to be to try to foster these attitudes. We've got to foster an attitude where we're building bridges and not building walls. And I think if we foster that attitude of wanting to build bridges instead of walls, it'll go a long way to helping the counseling take place in the PSNC classroom. And finally, we want to really try to help the students get beyond just the superficial problems. You know, just instead of majoring on, there can be many reasons why someone smokes. There can be many reasons why someone steals. There can be many reasons why someone's involved in sexual problems. And we have to get beyond just majoring on the outward manifestation of a problem and try to help them find out what the real root problem is. And I touched on this in an earlier session a few years back, called Biblical Counseling and Finding Out Problems, and Dave has a reference to that tape. And it's not easy, and it's not always going to take place in the classroom, in the PACE classroom, but we have to be willing and have our mind geared to trying to get beyond just the superficial problems and helping them learn what their real problems are. If they don't know what their real problem is, they're going to waste a lot of time trying to major on stopping this action, which has an attitude behind it. And if we don't get at the attitude, we'll never really get rid of the action. Or we might get rid of the action temporarily because they're in the teen challenge environment where they can't do that one action. But as soon as they get back out in the environment where they can do that action, then the attitude will lead to an action again. And some problems, and we have to gear ourselves, are long term. You're not going to have, and I think we need to, in Christianity, it's so easy to want to give a pat, quick answer. But we have to get out of that mindset and realize the problems are long-term. They're going to require long-term solutions. And we have to gear for the long-term. Gear for a month or two working on a problem in the classroom that we're going to counsel towards. And some problems, we're not going to know the answers. And it's not wrong to admit to a student that we don't know the answer. But we do know the source to the answer. I think sometimes we feel down because we get into the mindset that we're God and we have to solve all of their problems before they leave or we fail. And we've got to get away from that. We're simply guides guiding them to the source and solution of their problems, who is the Lord Jesus. And I guess what I really want to hit on in summing this up is that the stop points just aren't, and that's been alluded to before, but are not just places to stop and get a check mark, stop to get a signature. But they really are opportunities for us as teachers. They really are opportunities for us to counsel. They really are opportunities for us to establish a one-on-one relationship with a student. They're opportunities for us to really get to know that student in a way that beforehand we maybe never had known them and to see into their life. And if we'll look at the stop points as that, I think we'll put a lot more time into really stopping and really reading over and really trying to understand what is going on in this person's life rather than just throwing down a signature and going on. And I think that's what we need to realize. And at this time, I want to give us some time with the panel to really go into maybe some specific instances of some counseling that has taken place that will encourage you to really see what the Lord can do in such instances. Does anybody have any specifics they'd like to share?
I'd like to give an example of how a lesson in the personal studies can surface a problem, whereas in a traditional counseling setting, it might take 45 minutes before you've developed a rapport that a student would be willing to share a problem. Many times in the personal studies, they will be working through a lesson. They will write down a problem. You can come in at the stop point, and in 5 minutes, you can be in the same level of openness and sharing, whereas in a traditional counseling setting, it may take 45 minutes to get to that place. He was working on lesson 101. He was a new student in the program. He was an older guy, probably in his 40s, and was on the last question where I said, would you like to make some changes in how you've been responding to God's plan for your life? And he put down some answer like, I want to draw closer to God. And then he tacked on at the very end, and Christian attitude. It didn't even fit in the sentence structure. So I asked him to read his answer and to explain it in a little more detail. And he said just a few things. And I said, what do you mean by in Christian attitudes? And he says, well, there's this young kid in the program. He's about 15 years old or 16. He said, he's been really getting on my nerves. And I realized that if I don't watch my attitude, I'm going to get in a fight with him. I'm going to end up getting kicked out of the program. Well, that lesson provided a fantastic opportunity when the student was given an opportunity to express in more detail a problem surface that otherwise, in a normal setting, would not have surfaced until the fight took place and somebody was getting kicked out of the program or whatever. So that, to me, was just a fantastic example of how the personal studies lesson provides the opportunity. Now, the problem wasn't stated there. He just put Ann Kirshen attitudes. That didn't tell me anything. But when he had the opportunity to elaborate on that, then the problem service, we were able then to alert the other staff, watch this young guy, and see if, in fact, he is antagonizing this older student. And we were able to deal with the problem before it became a crisis.
I want to pick up on something you said, Dave. I think just being in the classroom 5 days a week with the students provides an opportunity for the relationship to grow, so that you don't always have to go through breaking down barriers to communicate with the teacher. The more you're in there, the more you are on I wouldn't say intimate level of communication, but you are on a very, can be on a very gut-to-gut level communication, which I think is good.
I think another thing that the classroom provides is that the lessons are kind of detached, where in regular counseling, you're sitting down with a person and there's that automatic for the other person feeling of defensiveness, like, oh no, I've got to let this person know me or something. Where when they're doing something that's detached from you, and then you come in on it, they've already kind of begun the process of breaking down the wall. That it's something outside of them. It's not a person that they have to deal with. It's something less threatening. It's a piece of paper that they're writing down their ideas. And then when you come in on it, it's like the wall, part of the wall is already down, so it's easier to open up and share because they've already got some of it down and they've not had to deal with getting it down in front of someone looking at them and eyeing over every part they're saying and then wondering if it's right. But they've just put it down and then you've come in, kind of third person, walked into the situation. It's almost like, you know, it's easier to share. It's there, it's already started, okay, I can get it out now. Mm-hmm. Whereas when, you know, and a lot of times regular counseling, you pull someone in right off, and you've got to work through all those defenses. And it's like Dave said, you know, in 5 minutes maybe, he's already let his defenses down because he's sharing with himself in a way. He's doing a lesson that's between him, and the defenses are down compared to in a regular session where the defenses might be more up. And I found that really helpful as far as the guys being more just having their defenses down and open.
I found something interesting with counseling in the personal studies is that sometimes the lessons provide an opportunity to see a particular problem that doesn't come out in counseling and doesn't come out in the lessons. I've had numerous times where I'd give lesson 305 to a student, which is the biography of my family, and he'd have a very difficult time doing it or would not want to do it at all. And right there, we would see that he has some serious problems with his family relationships and doesn't want to take a look at it. And so we could address that in counseling or give him some other lessons to help him begin to deal with that problem. But I find that just having the different lessons in the personal studies that address different subjects can bring about something like that, which would never come about in a normal counseling session.
I found, too, that in Lesson 108, a lot of times, after a month or so in the program, we almost start to assume that they know things about God or they've heard it, they must understand it. And that lesson provides a lot of places where do you, in the beginning, what are your questions about God? And then at the end, do you still have any questions about God? And one guy had put down that, how can I know that God loves me? You know, and after, you almost think, well, he's heard the gospel so many times, he understands that. But here he was, he didn't. And it didn't come out until he really, you know, he seemed to be doing good. He was always praising God in chapel, always sharing in lecture classes. Yet he had this nagging fear that didn't come out until in that lesson. He wasn't really sure, how do I really know? Yeah, the Bible says Jesus died, but how do I know God loves me? And it was really interesting because that provided a basis for a counseling session in which he really opened up and was very meaningful.
One issue that I think needs to be raised here is the issue of confidentiality. We could have a whole another separate session on this. In fact, we have done that in previous teacher seminars, and there is a tape available through the National Curriculum Office if you want to get it. But the point I want to make right now is, and I'll use an illustration to make the point. I was talking to a graduate of the program. She was attending college, and she says, you know one thing about the personal studies classes? She says, I opened up, and I shared with the teacher my problem, and the next day, all the other staff in the program were talking to me about it. And she says, I only got burned once. She says, that taught me I never opened up again in class. And that, to me, is a tragedy, because that is exactly what we do not want to happen. We do not want a student to get the idea, boy, personal studies class, that's the place where you shut up and you don't say a boo about what's really going on inside. We want to foster an atmosphere of openness, of trust, and there may be some staff that will not accept this or not agree with this or may not understand it, but I personally feel that in the classroom, that when a student shares a problem, that it should stay confidential between you and that student. Now, if you feel compelled to tell your director, then I think you should first go and tell that student, listen, this problem is a serious problem, and I must share this with my director. I want you to know that I'm going to tell him. And that way the student knows that somebody else knows about this. And because if, and I know in one center too, one of the staff was an intern, and this particular intern was not very discreet about her conversations, and she started talking to some of the other students in the program, and pretty soon everybody in the whole program knew, this is a different case, but it's the same basic problem, everybody in the program knew about this problem that the student had, and she'd shared it in confidence with one person.
Can I say something about that?
Sure.
In our center, we have a policy that whatever is shared in counseling is shared with all the staff. So if there is something that somebody's going to tell me and it's, you know, pretty deep, then I tell them right away, you know, I can't keep this quiet. I have to share it with the rest of the staff because we're a team and we don't, you know, keep things to ourselves. So at least they know before they tell me. Mm-hmm. But that's a policy that I can't change.
Right, and I think the point you've made, as long as you tell the students that, then they know what's coming.
Mm-hmm.
But and certainly you do not have the freedom to ignore your own, those in authority over you and say, well, I'll just ignore that policy because I don't like it or whatever. But if you do have the power to change that policy, I know I worked in a center, and that the policy was the opposite. It was if something is shared with you in confidence, and you feel that other staff do not need to know about the problem, that the student is dealing with it, and that you feel capable of dealing with it, then you do not have the responsibility to share that with everybody. And I was a young staff. I was irritated because I wanted to know, you know, what were the problems. But as I grew in my experience, I came to the point of realizing that there are some staff that cannot be trusted with certain information about certain students. Just to give an example, when you work in a ministry such as Teen Challenge, there are many times different cultural backgrounds that come together in staff and in students. And sometimes there are cultural misunderstandings or cultural weaknesses or prejudices, however you want to describe it, that some people carry with them. And or it may not even be culture. It may be another kind of a problem. A certain person has a particular kind of a problem, and certain staff will label them. Oh, he's one of them because he's got that problem. And it can create a negative bias towards that student, so the student doesn't have a chance. And I think it all depends on the policies of the center, but also depending on the staff. And particularly if you are a person in the position of top leadership, I don't feel that you should feel compelled to share with all of your staff that. But the other side of that is there are times the students will con you because they'll privately discuss it with one staff and then they'll privately discuss it with another staff and they'll be very sincere about working on this and come to find out they're pulling the wool over everybody's eyes. But I think that should be one of the factors. Do we really see progress in this student or not? If we don't see progress, then I think that we would have you know, I think that's another issue there, but in terms of dealing with it from that perspective.
Just to pick up on what you said, Dave, I think if there is an understanding, and like you were saying, Chris, if there's an understanding that whatever you share or a student shares with you, I think the understanding is that it doesn't leave the circle of the staff. In other words, it doesn't filter back out to the students.
Hmm.
Or even if one staff, even if that student shared with one staff, then all the staff out and another staff comes back to that student with the issue, I would say that would be betraying confidence in that kind of situation, even though all the staff may have known, without somehow communicating. Let's say if the teacher was the one that was initially shared with, you know, that might be the key person to work through. Because somehow, if that student felt confident enough to enough trust to share that with that teacher, then that's, it seems that that person would be the one to work through in helping that individual, which I think is going to be talked about more in some of our later sessions too, in helping that individual.
Well, there are certainly different opinions on this issue of confidentiality in terms of what is the proper way to deal with this. There are also some legal ramifications to the issue of confidentiality, particularly when it comes to discussing individual students with people who are not working at the Teen Challenge Center or whatever the name of the center is. And I think that the legal issues are very, very critical issues that we need to be aware of them. And I think also those of you that are listening to this on tape, that's an issue. This whole issue of confidentiality is something that you need to discuss with all of the staff so that there is a clear understanding, first of all, what are the legal issues involved here, and there are some very specific legal issues involved. And then also in our center, in our ministry, what will be the ethical standards that we use in terms of handling confidential problems that students share with us. And there needs to be a policy, it needs to be a written policy that the center has that all the staff are aware of, and it also needs to be a policy that is put into practice so that the students know what to expect one way or another. If this is the policy, then this is what they know is going to happen, and it shouldn't be something that changes from one day to the next, just depending on the attitude of the staff.
Can I share one more thing?
Sure.
In relating to, John, what you were sharing in the classroom situation, discussing the lessons and other projects, and as you were saying, students will begin to share about experiences and things, areas of their life, problems that need help. And my memory is not that good. So sometimes, or what I've done on some occasions, is I will keep a paper on a student and try to keep one on each student. And after the class time, I'll write down if something of importance was discussed so that I remember that. And when it comes time to work with this student on developing further studies for them in the future, we might, you know, want to come back to something that we talked about. Because if you're dealing with a lot of students, sometimes you might get them mixed up. And I've sometimes almost thought that I had got someone mixed up with someone else in a situation. That can be very embarrassing.
Anybody have anything further they want to add? Then this will close the session on counseling in the personal studies classroom.